Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, odds are pretty good. You've been listening to the show for any period of time that you know that I've been a bit of a political activist for a while. Not just just being on the radio, but started off doing grassroots political activism on a local level here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And then we had an opportunity as God increased our influence that we would get involved with statewide issues as well as some national issues. So I am an activist at heart, which is why I'm on the air 5 days a week. Trying to take advantage of the platform that the Lord has provided to have a positive impact, yes, on politics, but also for all of us on our walk with the Lord and our understanding of theology and the Bible and how we apply that to every nook and cranny of life. But activism's near and dear to me and has been for a while. One of the organizations that's been around for a while out there and is specific to you ladies, Concerned Women for America, which is Penny Nance has been the executive director for several years now. I've known her through some organizations that I've belonged to in the past. They do excellent work, and just another great opportunity for you to get involved, really on a state and local level, to try to have an impact on your legislature, on greater issues, as well as prayer. That's something that we need to pray. I forgot about that. Well, Scripture makes it perfectly clear, 1 Timothy chapter 2, that we're to pray for those in authority. Why? So that we can live quiet and peaceable lives. So we're all called to do that, and that's also a big part of what Concerned Women for America does. Jill Coward is the North Carolina State Director with Concerned Women for America, and she joins us by phone today. So I'm excited for you all to get to know Jill and get to know more about CWA and how you can plug in there. Jill, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
Oh, very good. Thank you, Steve.
You're very welcome, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. And just give us a little kind of Concerned Women for America 411. Just help us to know a little bit about the organization. Then I want to back up a little bit and talk about your own journey, how you ended up at CWA, because you kind of got into the world of activism as well through something that was going on in your particular denomination at the time. But tell us about CWA.
It was about 40 years ago that Beverly LaHaye was listening to a Barbara Walters special when she was interviewing Betty Friedan, who is certainly a feminist activist. And Betty Friedan said, I want to make sure I spend the rest of my life seeing that America becomes a humanist nation and that women will be the ones that take the roles farther. And when Beverly LaHaye heard that, she said, well, she didn't want any part of that. She didn't know anybody who would be like that. So she birthed that idea in 1978, and within a year had a conference in Southern California where she lived, where there were 1,200 people attending that conference. The particular issue at hand at that time was the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA. And, of course, we see that today still, but every time that CWA has fought that battle, it has not, ERA has not won. So it was a great battle, and since that time, CWA has worked on many other issues as well.
And CWA so works at the national level, but also has state chapters around the country like you do here in North Carolina. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so how did you get involved? Because this is an interesting story, I read this about you, Jill, about you and your husband and your own denomination at the time, one of the Lutheran denominations. But I think it's important to share that story so that people can see, because your track of getting involved and moving on and, to Crisis Pregnancy Centers and with CWA is very similar to my track, and I think it should be a similar track for everybody that says they care about the nation, say they care about biblical truth. But share a little bit about your own story and your own history getting into it.
Well, my husband grew up Lutheran, and lo and behold, it turns out to be one of the more liberal Lutheran denominations. Back in the 90s, we learned that with your tithes and offerings, you pay for abortion through your church's medical health care plan for pastors, staff, and their families. It was a shock to learn that. And what we did was we approached our church. We put letters out to every person in the church, and nobody, just about nobody cared. Man. And I was teaching the young people, like 6th and 7th graders, and I was asked to quit teaching when I taught on when the issue of abortion and the church's participation in it. So anyway, we did leave. There are other really good Bible-believing Lutheran denominations, and so we went to one of those, and then we went to a non-denominational church. But that was how we got started. I think wasn't long after that, must have been 99 or 2000, that CWA interviewed us, and we ended up even getting a broadcast by Focus on the Family back around 2000 or 2001, something like that.
All surrounding was that all surrounding the controversy there at that particular Lutheran denomination?
Yes. And I think at that time we knew what the Episcopalians were doing. We may not have been as familiar with the PCUSA and some of the, you know, it's just evolved, of course. We've just continued to see more and more mainline denominations lining up like that. So that's what launched us into pro-life activism.
Yeah, and the thing about that I would encourage everybody listening to us today, you go to a church, you like your pastor, there's a cross on the wall, they talk about the Bible. Don't assume that everything is okay, because you have to know what your denomination's doing behind the surface, behind the curtain, and that's where we can't just assume everything's fine because it's called a church. There's a lot of denominations in America that are pro-choice and are supporting things like this, and I'm so glad you and your husband kind of woke up to that. No knock on you guys. I think a lot of us kind of operate out of ignorance. So how did you then first kind of get involved with CWA?
Let's see. Well, I started volunteering at a crisis pregnancy center in my county, and then I was on staff. And when they came out with the article in their magazine at that time, also in that, I think it talked about prayer action chapters. And it's almost embarrassing to be the state director and not even having known about that until then. And so I contacted,
yeah, that's
I contacted
funny.
The prayer action.
Well, hold that thought, Jill. We're coming up on a break. Hold that thought right there. We'll pick it up there when we come back. We're talking to Jill Coward. She's the director of Concerned Women for America here in North Carolina. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. Getting involved. That's what it's all about. We'll come back right after this.
So what are we waiting for? A message in the sky.
It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today, talking a little bit about activism on the local level and the statewide level with Jill Coward, who is the state director for North Carolina for Concerned Women for America. Great organization. It's been around for decades. You know, you remember probably say LaHaye, Beverly LaHaye, Tim LaHaye. Tim LaHaye, most people know Tim LaHaye because of the Left Behind series. Beverly, who I met at a group called the Council for National Policy, which sounds ominous, I know, and it's kind of ominous, really. I'd say it's the epicenter of the religious right in many ways. And so Beverly got involved decades ago, just seeing what was happening in the culture, not being willing to sit on the sideline and do nothing. And so got involved and started Concerned Women for America. And Jill got involved several years ago. Jill, we really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. Honored to be on your show.
Thank you very much. So tell us a little bit about what Concerned Women for America does, like on a state level, kind of normal operations, because I really want our listeners, obviously the Christian ladies out there, to understand what CWA is all about and then how to get involved. But tell us a little bit about what's going on at a statewide level, and if does that change this year because it's an election year? Help us understand that.
Well, first of all, I'd like to share what our 7 core issues are, and these are the issues that we will always take action on. Prayer and action. The first would be sanctity of life. So we do spend so much of our time in policy or in the culture working on that. The defense of family, education, religious liberty, national sovereignty, sexual exploitation, and support for Israel. So within our state, for many years, I know you know this, but the listeners may not know this, we had a very liberal state legislature. We did not have a House outside of a majority of Democrats for the state House or the state Senate from the 1800s until 2010, the first year that North Carolina had a majority of Republicans. Up until that time, we had one senator, Senator James S. Forrester, who's a physician in Gaston County, and he would try to raise the same bill every year on the marriage amendment. It would never make it out of the committee because the majority were Democrats. Yeah. But in 2010, everything flipped, and so they determined that they would put it before the citizens of the state for a referendum vote in May 2012. Unfortunately, very unfortunately, heartbreakingly, Senator Forrester died, did not get to see that. But his wife, Mary Frances Forrester, who was the founder of our state chapter, crisscrossed the state with others, making sure that her husband's legacy would be successful. So that's the first thing we did. We no longer had to go to Raleigh and lobby on the marriage amendment like we had for all those years prior to that. In 2013, we felt it was important to try to protect our state from Sharia law. At that time, we had not heard of ISIS, and our legislators didn't even know what Sharia law was. We got Representative Chris Whitmire to propose an amendment, a bill on American laws for American courts to protect our Constitution from foreign laws, and that was passed. We worked hard on the bathroom bill, and, you know, initially we were pleased with that. We've, we did our part to help repeal Common Core. We get involved in politics, maybe not every time. We did do a project called She Votes in 2012 and 2014, where we did canvassing either on the phone or knocking on doors, and we believe that we'll be doing that again this year. I've not gotten the information yet from National.
And you guys in June also do a legislative visit. You're kind of visit your legislator day at the state capitol, right?
We certainly do. And this year we will have our 20th annual day at the capitol. And so we really are going to make this a special year. We don't have the date yet. It's usually either the first or the second Wednesday in June, and so we haven't determined that yet. It's to be announced. But yes, that's a very important thing for us to do. And the last couple of years, Tammy Fitzgerald joined us with NC Values Coalition, and anyway, it's just such an important time across the state. Not everybody wants to go to Raleigh for some of the other occasions that will take us there.
Sure.
But for the day at the Capitol, they really want to do that.
It's important to remind people. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we're talking to Jill Coward, who's the North Carolina State Director for Concerned Women for America. It's important to remember. And a lot of people go, well, you know, we've got Republicans control the House and the Senate. Okay, that's great. They don't have a supermajority. We're helping to get that back. That's great. But we still, that now you got to kind of strike while the iron is hot when we need to advance these types of issues to make sure the legislators that we hired, that we voted for, are dealing with these issues in a proactive way and passing legislation that helps, just like you were saying, on those issues, sanctity of life, defense of the family, education, religious liberty, national sovereignty, which deals with immigration, obviously sexual exploitation and support for Israel. We have to take advantage of the fact that we have majorities in both the House and the Senate, and that's a big thing that we need to do. What difference does it make when we show up down there, Jill? Why is it so important to show up in June, whenever the date is, and go see our legislators?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, Steve. When we go, we're certainly not the only group there. Generally, there are other groups that are taking advantage of their particular issue. But they always legislators always seem to enjoy seeing us. For one thing, preceding our day at the Capitol, we participate and do a project that we called Encourage a Legislator. Mm. So for several months, either members or guests or friends of our ministry will send out a card that, you know, all they have to do is to let the legislators know that they're praying for them. And,
yeah.
and we assign them, each of the people who want to send out cards, we assign them a legislator's name. And we also include other people in state government, and we include the president. We include our national delegation. And this year will probably include judges, too, judges and justices.
Yeah, which is a nonpartisan, and we're just encouraging them. I'm praying for you. Yes. It doesn't matter what party you're in.
Yes, and so we try to build a relationship. We're not hammering the legislators who are not our friends, who are anti-friendly, but we want them to know that we pray for them.
Yeah.
And we have found, as happened through the years, that there are some legislators who will say, I really appreciate your cards. And so they know that we are not going to take heavy fire against them.
Yeah.
So when we go, we're not looked upon as necessarily an enemy. And it just seems to make a difference. And we have gone into certain legislative offices and seen one of our cards on their bulletin board.
Yeah, which is, yeah, and then they know because you proved it by praying for you, reaching out to you, or encouraging you. We might not agree with you, but we care about you, we respect you, and we pray for you. That makes a big difference. How can people, Jill, find out real quick and get involved here in North Carolina? What's a good website?
Our website is nc.cwf, as in Frank.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. And what's good to have Jill Coward on the show. She's with Concerned Women for America, but they have their North Carolina faction, too, because CWA is a national organization, but they're also organized on a state-by-state basis. So here in North Carolina, we put the link up on the Facebook Live feed. So if you want to look at that, if you're listening on the radio, you're like, oh, what does this guy look like? Which, whatever. But on Facebook Live, we're also sharing some links and stuff as you look here in the studio, and then we continue to have a conversation during the commercial breaks. So Facebook Live is a little bit of a augmented reality to the radio show because we have an extra 14 minutes to work with during commercial breaks. So I would encourage you to check out the Facebook Live feed. It's just at the Steve Noble Show Facebook page. You can go there, but it's nc.cwfa.org. Okay, that will get you directly to Concerned Women for America, the North Carolina chapter, nc.cwfa.org. And we've got those links on Facebook Live. Jill did text me and wanted me to extend an invitation to all of you ladies here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. She's got a new prayer action chapter in Raleigh just tomorrow. So tomorrow night, Mount Vernon Baptist Church, which is right in the heart of North Raleigh, not very far from where I live, actually. Mount Vernon Baptist Church, 4 to 5:30. It's a prayer gathering. And that's really powerful. That really starts to change things and how you look at politics and how you look at politicians, particularly when you start praying for them. And especially when you're praying for people that you pray for, a president or a legislator, state level, or a member of Congress, House or the Senate, that you can't stand, and God will do something in your heart and your mind. I guarantee you that, because that's exactly what happened to me when I started to pray for Barack Obama. And I'm like, God, really? Do I pray for those in authority? Now, can't I just pray for the ones that I like, specifically the ones that I voted for? And God's like, no, you idiot. You pray for all of them, because all of them need our prayers. So that's an opportunity if you're here in Raleigh tomorrow at Mount Vernon Baptist Church, which would be Thursday from 4 to 5:30. CWA's got a prayer action chapter here in Raleigh, which is my backyard. So that's why I brought that up. Okay, let's talk about the impeachment. I haven't talked about it in a while, but I have been watching it. So how many of you have been watching the impeachment proceedings? Now that it's in the Senate, the House is over. That's a done deal, okay? I'm looking at this. This is how I'm kind of filtering all this. As somebody that's taught civics and the Constitution for 8 years to high school age homeschoolers, I come at it from that perspective. Okay, I try to be as nonpartisan as I can, and I try to operate constitutionally, which is what these guys and gals are supposed to be doing. But they don't, because those days are, for the most part, are over, unless your name is Alan Dershowitz. who voted for Hillary Clinton, does not like Trump, lifelong liberal Democrat. However, the other night, because he's on Trump's defense team, the other night, in a truly nonpartisan manner, he unpacked just did an incredible job at looking at the legality, the constitutionality, the precedent behind what's going on. And for me watching this, I watch the House management team and also in the House itself. And with that, I'm like, okay, this is like middle school because it's so emotional, a lot of hyperbole, throwing a lot of charges, a lot of assumptions. Even today, I was in the midst of one of my constitution classes with high school age homeschoolers, and we watched a segment of it, and we watched one of the Trump defense team lawyers speak, and then they watched, I can't remember which gal it was. I don't recall her name. It's an African-American lady on the House manager's team. She steps up to the plate, and it's hyperbole, it's charges, it's assumptions, it's her opinion, and then the defense team member steps up, and it's the law. It's the Constitution. It's the facts. Which is what this is supposed to be. This is supposed to, an impeachment proceeding, contrary to Nancy Pelosi's approach, is supposed to be a solemn thing. Not a great thing, not an exciting thing, not a celebratory thing. So I said to both my classes today, I said, what if you found out ironclad evidence caught red-handed that I've got a meth lab, I am running a child sex trafficking ring, and a couple other things. And it's the guilt looks pretty obvious. Haven't had the court case yet, but I'm brought up on, I'm arrested. It looks horrible. All this evidence. Now, would you then be excited about seeing your favorite teacher go to jail? How many of you would be excited about that? You know, and some of the goofball in a class here and there. Well, that'd be pretty funny. But most of them are like, I asked them, would you celebrate? Would that be funny to you? How many of you like me as a teacher? You know, well, we like you, Mr. Noble. Okay. How many of you would be happy about that? None of you? Okay, but how many of you would think it was right, it was just, that the evidence is obvious, that despite the fact that you like me and I'm your teacher, that all of a sudden you're like, this guy's got to go to jail. Okay, that's what impeachment is supposed to be. Not partisan, not political, legal. Do we have a president who has clearly broken the law, high crimes and misdemeanors? And in this case, we don't. So you watch the middle school team, who's all about emotion and interpretation and opinion, versus the law school team, who are self-controlled. By the way, did you notice in the opening statements, the Democrats took all 24 hours. That was like the dripping water Chinese torture, right? Drip, 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 24 hours. They used all of it. Do you know how much Trump's defense team used? They were allotted 24 hours. Do you know how much of it they used? 11. They had 13 hours left over. Why? Because when you just have the facts on your side, you just present the facts and you sit down. But when you don't have the facts on your side, you've got hyperbole, you've got you have impressions, you have opinions, you have allegations, then you got to wax on and on and on, and they know they're in trouble. So they're just going to keep pouring it on and pouring it on and pouring it on. So it was just disgusting, really. But it's been fascinating to watch and really healthy to watch. And I want to dig into. I've got a lot of comments from Dershowitz because this is important. I besides sitting here and just wanting to voice my opinion and talk about these things, whether it's impeachment, politics, theology, pop culture, whatever, I also want us to learn together. And there's some things to be learned here from Alan Dershowitz. So this is a Daily Wire article. Of course, this is a typical kind of language for an article title. Dershowitz obliterates the Dems' case for removing Trump from office. So he began teaching, Alan Dershowitz, if you don't know that much about him, he kind of got on all of our radar screens with the O.J. Simpson trial, okay? He began teaching law at Harvard when he was 28, the youngest ever to do so. He has handled a slew of high-profile cases, O.J. Simpson to Jeffrey Epstein to Harvey Weinstein. Now 81, Dershowitz retired in 2013 and has since been a regular media contributor, political commentator, and legal analyst. He recently got the call to join Trump's defense team and on Monday held court for a little more than an hour. Okay, so when you get an expert who's nonpartisan and impartial, who's just going to talk about the Constitution and the law, you give him an hour and he will slay, which is exactly what he did. That's the power of the Constitution, okay? So this was his opening comments. And then in the last segment, I'm going to share with you some of the actual guts of what he said. This is super important. There's a lot to learn here. Love Trump, hate Trump. Republican, Democrat, if you could set all that stuff aside, he is schooling all of us in a way that we all need to listen to. Here's what he said. I stand before you today as I stood in 1973 and 1974 for the protection of the constitutional and procedural rights of Richard Nixon, who I personally abhorred and whose impeachment I personally favored. And as I stood for the rights of Bill Clinton, who I admired and whose impeachment I strongly imposed, he said as he opened his remarks. Impartial guy, right? That's what we want our judges to be, by the way. I can't stand this guy, but I'm going to judge based on the law and based on the Constitution, regardless of my personal opinions. Okay, so he obviously doesn't belong on Capitol Hill. Quote, I stand against the application and misapplication of the constitutional criteria in every case and against any president without regard to whether I support his or her parties or policies. I would be making the very same constitutional argument had Hillary Clinton, for whom I voted, been elected and had a Republican House voted to impeach her on these unconstitutional grounds. He said he was there to answer one major question. Quote, do charges of abuse and obstruction rise to the level of impeachable offenses under the Constitution? That was the premise of his comments. Are these things even impeachable offenses? Obstruction of Congress and abuse of power. Should we even be talking about this? Or are these political issues, political differences? And then he brought in history and he brought in the Constitution. And it was awesome. So let's just start with this part. He's talking about what is impeachable. This is word for word, okay? The main thrust of my argument, however, and the one most relevant to these proceedings, is that even if that position is not accepted, even if criminal conduct were not required, the framers of our Constitution implicitly rejected, and if it had been presented to them, would have explicitly rejected such vague terms as abuse of power and obstruction of Congress as among the enumerated and defined criteria for impeaching a president. Now, here I am making, I think, a very important point. This is Dershowitz. Even if the Senate were to conclude that a technical crime is not required for impeachment, the critical question remains, and it's the question I now want to address myself to. Do abuse of power and obstruction of Congress constitute impeachable offenses? Now, why would he say it that way? Because those are the articles of impeachment that the House brought. Okay? That's who they brought to the party, so now you're going to make them dance with who they brought. The relevant history, he said, answers that question clearly in the negative. Each of these charges suffers from the vice of being so vague a term that they will be equivalent of tenure at the pleasure of the Senate, who he was quoting founding fathers, in that case, James Madison, who is largely known as the father of the Constitution. We'll keep getting schooled by Mr. Alan Dershowitz when we come back after this break. Don't go anywhere. This is important. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Alan Dershowitz, I'm going to keep reading from his comments Monday night. He just schooled everybody on the lack of constitutional veracity of this entire impeachment process. But then he goes on the View Wednesday. Hey, Alan. Note to Alan, just earlier today, he goes on the View. And they went ballistic because your lifetime approval of the Democrat Party, Alan, is gone. All your Democrat card, man card, all that, it's all gone. Because you threw down on behalf of the Constitution, on behalf of the law, which happened to, in this case, benefit the President of the United States. Now you're out. I mean, at one point, Whoopi Goldberg, who's obviously a constitutional attorney and expert, says to Dershowitz, that's baloney. Whoopi Goldberg telling Alan Dershowitz his constitutional argument is baloney. Welcome to the Twilight Zone. Okay. And then Steve Baker, a friend of the show who's in Iowa, in Des Moines actually, is going to the Trump rally. Trump rally tomorrow night in Des Moines, Iowa, days before the Iowa caucus. That is just classic Trump. That is so funny. And you know, I support Trump a lot. In many ways, some ways I don't, but in many ways I do. But I'm not like a MAGA hat wearing guy. No knock to you that are. But I love watching this stuff. Him, the fact that he's doing that is just hilarious to me. That he's just out there showing up a couple of days before. It's going to be fast. I think Bernie Sanders is going to win Iowa. I think he's going to win New Hampshire. I actually think there's a really good chance that he beats Biden. Could you imagine that? Trump versus Bernie Sanders. You just can't make this kind of stuff up. Okay, back to what Mr. Alan Dershowitz, lifelong Democrat, did not vote for Trump, voted for Hillary, doesn't like Trump, and what he says, okay? What was in the president's mind? This was a fascinating approach. This is what Dershowitz was saying. Constitutional law professor Josh Blackman, this is directly from Dershowitz's comments, drew the following relevant conclusion from this and other historical events. He said, quote, politicians routinely promote their understanding of the general welfare while in the back of their minds considering how these actions will affect their own popularity. Often the two concepts overlap. What's good for the country is good for the official's re-election. All politicians, he said, understand that dynamic. Like all human beings, Dershowitz adds, presidents and other politicians persuade themselves that their actions seen by their opponents as self-serving are primarily in the national interest. I'm just trying to help the American people here. That's what they voted for me to do. And of course, you're trying to help the American people. At the same time, it's going to help your political position, right? So it's self-serving and in the national interest all at the same time. Do you understand that? Makes perfect sense. In order to conclude, Dershowitz says, that such mixed motive actions constitute abuse of power, opponents must psychoanalyze the president and attribute to him a singular self-serving motive. Such a subjective probing of motives cannot be the legal basis for a serious accusation of abuse of power that could result in the removal of an elected president. Yet, this is precisely what the managers are claiming. Here's what they say. Quote, whether the president's real reason, the ones actually in his mind, are at the time legitimate. What? What a standard. What was in the president's mind, actually in his mind? What was the real reason? Would you want your actions to be probed for what was the real reason why you acted? Even if a president were, it clearly shows in my mind that the framers could not have intended this psychoanalytic approach to presidential motives to determine the distinction between what is impeachable and what is not. Then he did on quid pro quos. Okay, this is excellent. As a condition to sending aid to a foreign country, obviously a highly disputed matter in this case that would not by itself constitute an abuse of power. Talking about quid pro quos. Consider the following hypothetical case that is in our news today as the Israeli Prime Minister comes to the United States for meetings. Let's assume a Democratic president tells Israel that foreign aid authorized by Congress will not be sent or an Oval Office meeting will not be scheduled unless the Israelis stop building settlements. Quid pro quo. I might disapprove of such a quid pro quo demand on policy grounds, but it would not constitute an abuse of power. Quid pro quo alone is not a basis for abuse of power. It's part of the way foreign policy has been operated by presidents since the beginning of time. The claim that foreign policy decisions can be deemed abuses of power based on subjective opinions about mixed or sole motives, that the president was interested only in helping himself, demonstrate the dangers of employing the vague, subjective, and politically malleable phrase, quote-unquote, abuse of power, as a constitutionally permissible criteria for the removal of a president. This is Dershowitz again from Monday night. Now it follows that if a president, any president, were to demand a quid pro quo as a condition to sending aid to a foreign country, obviously, a highly disputed matter in this case, that would not by itself constitute an abuse of power. Let me repeat. Nothing in the former National Security Advisor John Bolton revelations, even if true, would rise to the level of an abuse of power or impeachable offense. That is clear from the history. That is clear from the language of the Constitution. You cannot turn conduct that is not impeachable into impeachable conduct simply by using words like quid pro quo and personal benefit. It's inconceivable, Dershowitz said, that the framers would have intended such politically loaded and promiscuously deployed a term as abuse of power and weaponized it as a tool of impeachment. Because, by the way, friends, abuse of power is not against the law, which means it's not an impeachable offense. Then this was great. I'm going to finish with this, okay? I wish I had more time. I'd read all of this to you because it's that important. On abuse of power, obstruction of justice. Okay, this is what Dershowitz said Monday night. Sure, nobody was above the law, but they created a law. Talking about founding fathers. They created a law by which Congress could impeach, and they did not want to expand that law to include all the criteria that permitted impeachment in Great Britain. The framers would never have included did not include abuse of power as an enumerated and defined criteria for impeachment. By expressly rejecting maladministration, which is a phrase they toyed with early on, can we impeach for maladministration? They implicitly rejected, quote-unquote, abuse. Nor would the framers have concluded obstruction of Congress as among the enumerated and defined criteria. It is too vague, indefinable, especially in a constitutional system in which, according to Alexander Hamilton in Federalist 78, the legislative body is not themselves the constitutional judge of their own powers. And the construction they put on them is not conclusive upon other departments. Instead, He said the courts were designed as an intermediate body between the people, as declared in the Constitution, and the legislature in order to keep the latter within the limits assigned to the authority, meaning the House of Representatives is not the courts. So when the House had a problem with Trump saying, I'm not going to abide by your subpoenas because of executive privilege, their only redress would be to go to the court system, which they didn't do. But then he talked about, this was fascinating. This is so good. I'm trying to see if he put this in here. He did this whole history lesson, that it's not in this particular article, about the use of the phrase abuse of power. And who is that an impeachable offense? And then he goes, okay, just about every president in the history of the nation, all 45 of them, from George Washington to Donald Trump, has been accused of abuse of power. George Washington was accused of abuse of power. Thomas Jefferson was accused of abuse of power. Samuel Adams was accused of abuse of power. Lincoln was accused of abuse of power. Ronald Reagan was accused of abuse of power. Obama was accused of abuse of power when they refused to turn over some information in the Fast and Furious. So all these presidents in all these years accused by members of the legislature of abuse of power, yet not a single one of them was ever impeached. Why? Because that's not an impeachable offense. It's a subjective observation about the political maneuverings of a president. It is a political observation. And that's all that's going on with the House of Representatives, the Democrats. They don't like his politics. They don't like his foreign policy manipulation, the way he's handling it. They don't like the way he handled the former ambassador to the Ukraine. They don't like him. Well, sorry, your dislike of the guy, if the guy makes you want to throw up in your mouth 10 times a day, that is not an impeachable offense. You want to know how you deal with that? Beat him in the next election. But I think they know they can't beat him in the next election. So guess what? We'll beat him some other way. And this is the way they do it. So that's what's going on. So again, back to my observation about the whole process. The Democrats' impeachment process, the way they handle it, what they say, they took all 24 hours of their 24 hours opening statement to basically act like a bunch of middle schoolers. Hyperbole, emotion, accusation. Then the president's defense team gets up there. Allotted 24 hours, they only took 11. And all they did, they just did law school stuff. Constitutional attorneys, law school, here's the facts, here's what the Constitution says, here's the precedent, here's what's missing, here's what they didn't tell you, fact, 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 fact. All objective and knowable. And that's why they can sit down. They can just sit down. So they're still doing it now. So just so you know, just like with the Clinton impeachment, here's what they're at now. I was watching this earlier today. Now they get to, I don't know if they have 18 hours allowed or how many hours. It's a lot. Now it's questions. It's Q&A. Here's the way that works. If you haven't watched it, you should watch it because it's fascinating and it's historical. Okay, it's only the third time in our nation's history this has happened. That's a big deal. So now they ask questions. The questions get asked this way. The senator or several senators... Earlier today, there was a senator from both Lindsey Graham, a question from both Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz. So they write down their question. They give it to the page. The page takes it to John Roberts, the Supreme Court Justice. That's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He's presiding over the Senate right now. He reads it. And then they say, this question is for the House managers. This question is for the president's defense team. And they read the question. And then that team member stands up and gives the answer. And they decide who they want. So you got two teams here. It looks like a classic debate contest. If you're looking at it, camera angle, John Roberts is in the top of the picture in the back. You got President Trump's defense team on the right. You got the House managers on the left and all their staff. Papers and stacks and post-it notes all over the place. Then they decide, based on the question, who are you going to send up to answer? Now you watch it. And I'm try to watch it in a nonpartisan way. Just watch the word choice. The language choice, look for hyperbole, look for charges versus facts. What are they appealing to? Somebody's opinion, somebody's observation, or something in the law. And you're going to see the law school on the right side, the middle school on the left. It's painfully obvious. And hopefully, it'll be over soon. And the president will be acquitted and we can move on. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk to you again. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward. Hey!